Company, Mr. Monk.
May it please the court, Brandon Monk for appellant James Gauthier. This is being pilot retaliation case where Goodyear fired my client 2 days after he refused to change his written statement about a hydrocarbon leak that triggered regulatory violations with TCEQ for Goodyear. We're here after defendant's motion for summary judgment was granted, and we're seeking reversal and remand. I'd like to begin by talking about the timeline, and then I'm going to move into the issues that the trial court gave for the dismissal and discuss those with some case law and some statutes. But the critical dates are the June 12th date is where we really begin this. This is the date of the hydrocarbon leak. Mr. Gauthier is a board operator. He notices that there's some equipment that's malfunctioning. It's not getting proper reads and things like that. There's a process whereby him and his team, which includes a team lead who is Cooper and another individual named Bergeron, Gauthier being the individual on the board, would have to remain with the board, but he could call on these other team members to go out and investigate to determine if there was something on the board that maybe was not being detected properly, but that was still triggering reason to investigate, that they could go out and look into these issues. When they would do that, they would go out in the field and they would use handheld LEL meters to try to detect the hydrocarbon that might be out in the field. And initially, the issues on the board that Mr. Gauthier identifies, he sends these folks out and they investigate. They don't find any signs that there's a hydrocarbon leak. But there continue to be issues with the readings on the board, malfunctions of some sort. I think they identify later that there are issues with the capacitance probe and associated with the way that this was reading out with the water levels and with the decanter. But at the time, they don't exactly know what the issue is. They just know that something's being reported on the board and they're trying to find out if this is a leak. After some struggle with that, they find that there has been a leak in one of the ditches. And they identified that again by hand, not through the detection system that would have been available through Gauthier at the board. That was faulty and did not necessarily detect that hydrocarbon leak. It detected other issues, but not the leak itself. So at that time, when there's a hydrocarbon leak that's detected, there is a call that occurs where Cooper and my client are present. It's on speakerphone, and they call Garcia, who is the site shift manager that offers an affidavit in the case. And this is where there's a fact conflict in the case, but Gauthier's position is that it was reported to Garcia that there was a hydrocarbon leak, that probably more likely than not that there was a hydrocarbon leak. And this came from a statement that Cooper made on the phone where my client was present. Garcia later in his affidavit denies that he's told at that time that there was a hydrocarbon leak. There's mention.
Let me ask you, sir. By the time that Gauthier was asked if he was willing to change his statement, as I understand it, Goodyear had already reported their environmental violation to the Texas Commission.
The actual timing of the reporting for the initial notification from Goodyear is June 15th, and that's in the record at 302. The date that they ask Gauthier to change the statement is a little bit in conflict in the record. The written statement that Gauthier gives is dated June the 14th, and it's June the 14th that they ask him to change the statement. There's a later statement that's dated June the 16th where they claim that Gauthier has signed a set of notes that HR Bevel has prepared. Gauthier denies that he signs those notes at all and says that they presented those notes as being signed by him and they were never signed by him. They're interesting in that there's some different handwriting in on those notes that it deals with this specific issue about what the site shift manager Garcia was told. But the report from Goodyear is the 15th, the handwritten notes are the 14th. They go on and they have to make an additional final report, Goodyear does, on June 25th, 2021. So there's an on, and that's in the record at 304. So there's an additional report that they make. And the initial report that, Goodyear makes on the 15th, there are really two narratives that are you can see from that if you read the notes very closely. And they are, there's this one narrative which is, there's a leak on the 12th and it's reported. But then there is another narrative that slips in the initial report that is that there is no discovery or no determination, I think they use the word determine, that the leak had occurred until the 14th. And this is exactly what Bevel admits in her affidavit that she is going in to Gauthier to try to seek clarity about, which is this timeline, which is Gauthier's claiming he did tell. And so she's actively driving at that and admits to that, that that's something she's looking to identify as a timeline issue for them. So they're sorting it out, but then by the time of the final report to TCQ and the record at 304, they've had to go away from this theory that they didn't determine it or discover it until the 14th. And that's what's critical about what they're looking to have changed. So the timing does get confusing, and I know they've contended they've already reported by then, but not really, because the 15th they've reported initially, and they've floated two theories out. And only later do they feel like that they, because Gauthier does not change his statement, have to be locked into this theory that it was the 12th. And their report then on the 15th is very late, right? It's significantly more late than if it had been on the 14th, and we've got this 24-hour window. So that's where they're moving to, but they could not get there because Gauthier would not change his statement. So in that handwritten statement that Gauthier provides, that's in the record at 298 through 300, it shows really that Garcia is aware of this valve issue, but also that he asked to get another stripper hot and ready. And that's critical in this field because it's indicating, and Garcia does not really address that very well in his affidavit, it's critical as indicating there's a serious mechanical problem with the C unit that they were dealing with. And in that statement, specifically, Gauthier says that he told the team lead that that Cooper tells Garcia that there was probably hydrocarbon in the ditch. And so it's at that point, really, that the report should have been made. The chain of command here is that Gauthier is under team lead Cooper. Team lead Cooper actually detects and finds it with the hand meter. Cooper then tells Garcia that this leak has occurred, but then later denies that. And Gauthier was present for that conversation. So it's on June 16th that we have this date of the signing of Gauthier's notes. The trial court, when it deals with that, says that it'll take Mr. Gauthier at his word that probably happened on the 15th, that likely happened on the 15th. Of course, they had already asked him to prepare his written statement, and he had prepared that on the 14th and signed that, and that's in the record. So on the 17th, then Gauthier is terminated, and the trial court says that the reasons that they give that there is no issue on summary judgment and this should not go forward to trial is they say there is no triable issue on whether he was required to commit the illegal act, basically in looking for a more explicit statement from the employer in regard to change the statement or else we will fire you, which Higginbotham really talks about the fact that that is not needed. And then the trial court also dealt with the issue that changing the statement they didn't necessarily see as an illegal act. But on that point, in the record at 581, the trial court does agree that falsifying statements to avoid regulatory enforcement can constitute a criminal act. And so that acknowledgement really is just back to the same fact question, which we think would require reversal, which is this real determination that a jury's going to have to make about, you know, did Gauthier report timely and were they driving at some change of that statement and was his termination as a result of that? So he's helped out a great deal by temporal proximity, which is looked to in other employment contexts to provide a basis for causation. And we cite to the Brown versus Walmart case on that. Here we have 2 days in terms of the temporal proximity. I don't think that temporal proximity is wholly sufficient to defeat their reasons of pretext. but it is probably wholly sufficient to survive summary judgment on the causation issue. But in terms of defeating pretext, we also point to the fact that in the same circumstance, Cooper and Bergeron were involved and were not terminated. And in fact, it was really Cooper that had identified the hydrocarbon with the LEL meter. And so there's disparate treatment in terms of how Gauthier is treated. And we think the thing that explains that is his refusal to change the statement and get in line so that they can make this about something they were reporting that was determined on the 14th versus determined on the 12th. The issues involving the Texas Penal Code that we point to, I think that the court, in order to deal with those and have a good understanding, you have to track the definitions. The definitions end up being quite broad. For example, defining official proceeding as anything before a public servant, and that's Penal Code definitions 1.0733, definition 33. And then when you deal with Texas Penal Code 37.10, which is tampering with a governmental record, which are the crimes that we say support this illegal act that he was asked to do, which is, you know, change your statement with the idea that the statement would be used in this regulatory investigation. And we're all aware that these internal documents that the company is preparing are eventually going to make it into the hands of TCEQ as they look into this issue.
This 37.10 argument that you make, I don't think you made it earlier in the proceedings, did you? Is this coming up on the reply brief?
We did make it earlier, but I would admit that we did not cite exactly to that definition.
Where did you argue it?
We were arguing earlier that it was required by law that these documents were kept as part of the records of the internal company and that they would be turned over to the agency. And so ultimately it was about that broader concept and not about drilling down into the definitions until later on. But that issue was, you know, it was raised also by their briefing, I think, is why we raised it in reply. There is discussion about, with those provisions that in particular, I think the trial court looked at some of those definitions as well in her decision and just really took that in a different direction on facts, stating that there was no indication that those internal documents were going to go into the investigation. And ultimately, this governmental record definition includes documents required by law to be kept by others for information of government, and that's the definition that we point to. The other interesting case on that point is the Morales versus Simuflight case, which is it involved a request to sign an internal document and just sign a blank document, and that then the company would be able to write in whatever they wanted to. And that was on a document that it was internal, but that everyone knew could be used in an FAA investigation. So similarly, the court found that document could support the claim that we're talking about. With respect to the Higginbotham case, the court looked more towards an explicit requirement that there was a request to commit a crime. Gauthier and his testimony points at, this is in the record at 400 to 401, he mentions that there was an environmental manager that was saying that the company would be fined. This is during the investigation he's talking about.
Well, that also, didn't Higginbotham involve a lot more intense effort by the employer to?
With Higginbotham?
One question here, right?
Correct, yes. I do agree with that. Higginbotham allegedly, I think, involved a series of training and such as that and some speeches where they were rehearsing.
Coaching him on what?
Correct. That's absolutely true. And while that's not true in this case, there's nothing that really indicates that there has to be that, you know, type of severe, pervasive, or overtime conduct. It's really Higginbotham deals with the fact that it's about this decision that the employer puts the employee in, which is they're being asked to commit the illegal act, and just by being asked to commit the illegal act, they're being put in this untenable position, really, that they'd be fired if they did not do that, because they reference insubordination. You know, single acts of insubordination could justify termination, and that's how they sort of reason through that. And I think with that reasoning, it could apply in a single instance as well.
I'm about out of time. I'll sit down. Thank you.
Great. You've reserved 5 minutes. Ms. Edwards.
May it please the court. Kelly Edwards, counsel for the appellee, the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. The record before this court supports an affirmation of the district court's grant of summary judgment for three primary reasons, each of which I will address in turn. One, the appellant has failed to make a showing that is sufficient to create a fact issue as to whether Goodyear required him to commit an illegal act carrying criminal penalties as required under Texas's Sabine Pilot Doctrine. Two, the district court correctly concluded that Gauthier presented insufficient evidence that the sole reason Goodyear terminated his employment was his refusal to commit an illegal act. And three, there is no indication that the district court applied incorrect evidentiary standards in considering Goodyear's motion for summary judgment. First, the district court's judgment in Goodyear's favor should be affirmed because Gauthier has failed to show that Goodyear's invitation for him to amend his written statement amounted to a request that he perform an illegal act, let alone that he was terminated for it. While Texas's Sabine Pilot decision recognizes a limited exception to the state's at-will employment doctrine, for now 40 years, Texas courts have emphasized the narrowness of that exception and have declined countless opportunities to expand it. Thus, Sabine Pilot allows a former employee a cause of action only when the employee can show that the sole reason for the termination is the employee's refusal to perform an illegal act that subjected the employee to criminal penalties. It is axiomatic that in order for there to be a refusal by the employee, there must be a request from the employer. Sabine Pilot itself involved a case where the employer demanded that its employee continue to illegally dump material into the water or be terminated. But here, this is not a case about an employee who was given the choice between committing an illegal act or being terminated. This is instead a case about an employee whom the company reasonably believed to have provided misleading information in company documents to cover up his own mistake, and then, when given the opportunity to correct his lie, doubled down on that misrepresentation. The record evidence shows that it was that dishonesty, or at least the company's reasonable belief that it was dishonest, that led to Gauthier's termination and not any request that he commit further dishonesty. Here, Mr. Gauthier alleges that the ask that Goodyear made of him was, quote, whether to change his statement, unquote, as part of an internal human resources investigation. He testifies in his deposition to this three times, the first at record 257, then at 259, and then at 260, and then the fourth time he talks about it, he says that the ask was, things didn't match up with the time frame, would you be willing to change your statement? This type of question posed to an employee about whether they would like to engage in an act is far from the same as a demand to commit an act, or even a request to commit an act. In fact, what the Texas Supreme Court has said is that an employee must be unacceptably forced to choose between risking criminal liability or being discharged from his livelihood. In interpreting Sabine Pilot over the years, lower Texas courts have found that an employer merely requesting the employee to commit an illegal act is insufficient to meet this standard. And this court has found, in interpreting Texas law, that an employee's subjective interpretation of the supervisor's remarks, rather than a directive to commit an unlawful act, cannot support a Sabine Pilot claim. And so, even taking Mr. Gauthier's account of the exchange as true, nothing about the HR representative's query about whether he wanted to change his statement meets this demanding standard. Even viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Gauthier, and even assuming that the changing of his statement would or could have constituted an illegal act under the circumstances, he was merely given the opportunity to perform that act, not required to do it. And so this type of communication is insufficient to state a claim under Sabine Pilot as a matter of law. But even if the invitation to Gauthier to change his statement were interpreted somehow to be a directive, Gauthier still hasn't identified how or why that would have been akin to him committing an illegal act. Texas courts have repeatedly noted that to be actionable under Sabine Pilot, the alleged illegal acts must carry criminal penalties, not merely civil liability or civil penalties. And the district court in this case properly concluded that none of the criminal statutes Gauthier cited to supported an illegal act under the circumstances. Appellant's primary brief in this appeal doesn't identify the criminal statutes that Gauthier believes he was asked to violate, but his underlying summary judgment briefing cited to three Texas criminal statutes, and then his reply brief in this appeal cites to a fourth. Each of those are related to witness or document tampering or making false statements under oath. Critically, however, there is no evidence in the record to support an argument that the conduct here at issue could have violated any of those statutes. There is no evidence that Gauthier made his statement or any statement under oath. There is no evidence that the statement was given as part of an official proceeding, as that is defined under the law, or made to law enforcement. Instead, the only record evidence is that the statement was part of an internal investigation into the circumstances surrounding the leak. There is no evidence that Goodyear directed Gauthier to make or provide false information to a government entity. Moreover, each of the criminal statutes that Gauthier cites to require knowing conduct. And this is critical because Gauthier admitted that he did not know at the time whether the company had to report the leak to the TCEQ at all, and that's at record 267. Also critically, based on the undisputed facts in the record, the meeting at issue occurred after the company's TCEQ report was submitted. And there is nothing in the record suggesting that the company could amend the report after the fact, let alone that it did or it tried to. The record 304, which my friend on the other side cites as the final report, is dated June the 15th. There's no reference to a June 25th date in that report as he has represented. And as such, there is no evidence that the conversation between Human Resources and Mr. Gauthier occurred during a regulatory investigation, as Gauthier contends. And so because Gauthier has failed to demonstrate the existence of a genuine issue of material fact for trial, as to the issue of whether Gauthier or Goodyear required him to commit an illegal act for carrying criminal penalties, the district court properly granted summary judgment. Second, and most importantly, or also importantly, even if Gauthier did have evidence that Goodyear's termination was motivated somehow by his refusal to commit an illegal act, the district court still correctly concluded that he presented no evidence that his refusal to change his statement was Goodyear's sole reason for terminating him. The Texas Supreme Court has made it abundantly clear that an employer is not liable under Sabine Pilot where the termination is based on both a refusal to commit an illegal act and a legitimate reason for the termination. The undisputed record evidence indicates that Goodyear made the termination decision because it found that Gauthier committed two very serious violations. One, he failed to timely report the hydrocarbon leak. And two, he made material representations through work orders that he submitted after the fact. Even Gauthier admits that he was terminated in part because the company felt he did not timely report the leak, and that's at record 263. It is therefore undisputed that Goodyear had at least one legitimate reason to terminate Gauthier's employment. And for that reason alone, he cannot show that he was terminated solely for refusing to commit an illegal act, which is fatal to his Sabine Pilot claim. Finally, there's no indication that the district court applied incorrect legal standards or evidentiary standards in evaluating Gauthier's claims. With regard to causation, Gauthier relies on his argument of temporal proximity between the conversation at issue and his termination. But in a case like this one, where the evidentiary standard is but-for causation, the Fifth Circuit has repeatedly stated that temporal proximity alone cannot be sufficient proof of causation. With respect to his purported evidence of disparate treatment, Gauthier's comparator arguments are also flawed in several respects. First, he cites no authority that evidence of disparate treatment can prove causation in a Sabine Pilot case. But even if it could, or even if it does, while Gauthier points to the two outside operators, Cooper and Bergeron, as his comparators, the record evidence does not support his arguments regarding them. While both Cooper and Bergeron also failed to timely report the gas leak, they were both severely disciplined for that failure. And critically, Gauthier's arguments regarding them make no logical sense because Gauthier testified in his deposition that he believes they too were asked to change their statements and refused, yet they were not terminated. That's at record 260. That admission alone undermines his reliance on comparator evidence. Gauthier also extensively argues, without authority or citation, that the district court failed to draw reasonable inferences in his favor. But in doing so, he misstates the applicable legal standard, and that is that a court's duty is to draw reasonable inferences in the non-movement's favor at the summary judgment stage. It doesn't require the court to extend wholly unreasonable inferences or inferences amounting to mere speculation or conjecture. Gauthier asks this court not just to draw reasonable inferences in his favor, but to draw all inferences, including those supported only by speculation. And so the district court properly found that Gauthier's unsupported assertions and argument are too speculative to require her to grant him those inferences. For all of those reasons, we believe that the district court's grant of summary judgment should be affirmed. Unless the panel has questions, I will yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Monk, you've got 5 minutes.
Thank you. I want to begin by looking at these issues in the record associated with the final report date, because I think this is just a factual issue, again, that has to be resolved by the trier of fact. The record dates for the both, if you look at the times that they're looking at, they're going to claim to you that it happened on the initial report was June 15th at the exact minute and second, and that the final notification was on June 15th, 2021, at the exact minute and second that the initial notification was made. That's not reasonable. If you look at the top of those documents and the record, in particular, 304 in the record, it has the dates that they were submitted, and it says the June 26th date for this final notification. So that's a correction just factually that's very important, because they do go on and make a change to this dual narrative. And I think that shows up most clearly in those documents, and that's the focus of what they're asking him to change. And it clearly is. What happens on this final report is they carry over the information verbatim from the initial notification, but that's not the date that the final report was sent. That date that the final report was sent is at the top of that record page, and it says this later June date. I think that's very important in terms of the timing of, and understanding the allegations. Statements from Gauthier are more extensive as well in the record about what he saw was going on. In the record at 263, He says, I believe the hydrocarbon alarm was not reported to TCEQ in time. In that same discussion, he mentions that the site shift manager denies that he was told that the leak was reported, but Gothia has stood his ground on that point throughout all of this. Where it shows up in the record that he has stood his ground is both in his written statement, which he says, quote, this is at 299 in the record, Team TL told SSM that he felt we had probably put some HC to the ditch. And then in the record at 312, these are the notes that Bevel claims that she had Gauthier signs, but he denies. It says in those notes, quote, TL told SSM felt like we had put HC in the ditch, end quote. And then another quote, TL laughs when he's stressed. And that's in the record at 312 again. So those are the statements that Gauthier stood by and would not change with respect to his statement. And those are the statements that eventually have to leave in the final report because they are not allowed to keep this narrative about the 14th being the date that they determined that this leak had occurred. They should have reported on the 12th, and the site shift manager knew about that. The work orders that Gauthier puts in, they're in no way fabricated. He testifies in the record at 384 that they were commonplace and common practice whenever you had hydrocarbon alarms that went off. And so this was ordinary course of business to have those checked out and calibrated because there had been something on the panel that was not reading right. Even at that time, if he did not know the exact cause of what had put hydrocarbon in the ditch, he knew that there needed to be work orders that were put in, and his work orders were put in before he left that shift on the 12th, which is additional record evidence that he was making this report on the 12th and that it was significant. They were involving I&E and mechanical to make these repairs. They were setting up another unit to go forward because everyone was aware that there was an issue with this one that eventually they found out it had put hydrocarbon into the ditch. The real test in this is whether a reasonable employee would understand that these hydrocarbon leaks have to be timely reported. Gauthier knew that much. He didn't have to know all the intricacies of the criminal statute specifically or those elements, but he knew that there was a fine that was at issue, that they were investigating, and that HR is trying to have you admit something that's not true, and he does not do that, and he is terminated within those 2 days. And so we appreciate the court's time on this case.
Thank you, Mr. Monk. The case is submitted, and the court is now adjourned.